This is Fresh Air. Let's continue our Emmy Week series with another nominee, comic, writer, and actor John Mulaney. He spent 5 years as a writer on Saturday Night Live, starting in 2008. He and Bill Hader, who we just heard from, co-created the character Stefan. Mulaney returned to host SNL twice in the past year. He's nominated for 2 Emmys for hosting SNL and 2 for his work on IFC's documentary Now. Last year, he won an Emmy for writing his comedy special, Kid Gorgeous. Here's an excerpt from his SNL opening monologue last February.
I'm very happily married now. My wife is Jewish, and I was raised Catholic, which you could all tell from the moment I walked out. That's not a big deal, getting married if you're Jewish and Catholic. Only a couple people asked about it, and they were my parents. Before we got married, my mother asked me if my wife was going to convert to Catholicism. You're right to laugh. It's a stupid question. Oh, I don't know, Mom. Let me go ask. Let me go see if a 29-year-old Jewish woman who doesn't like any of my suggestions would convert to, what was it again? Roman Catholicism? How would I even have that conversation? What, do you come home with a brochure and you're like, hey, honey, allow me to tell you about an exciting, not new organization. Don't Google us. You know that strange look of, you know that strange look of shame and unhappiness I have in my eyes at all times, especially after sex, and it was all forced on me at birth? What if you voluntarily signed up for it?
That's John Mulaney hosting Saturday Night Live last February. John Mulaney, welcome back to Fresh Air. Well, you've hosted Saturday Night Live twice in the past year or so. Did you write your own opening monologues after having written them for so many people?
I did. Yeah, I wrote them, and a large part of them were pieces of stand-up I was doing at the time, both this year and last year. And it was very fun to do after writing so many monologues. I wrote a monologue for, I think, every host for about 3 years, along with the wonderful writer Simon Rich, who my second show approached me at the after party. We really liked each other right away and were already working together. And he said, you and I are going to write a monologue every week because no one wants to write the monologue. So they'll always be an open spot for the monologue. And he said, and guess what? They can't cut the monologue. So that was our sneaky 20, he was 23 and I was 25. And that was our sneaky way of trying to always have a spot in the show. I, by doing the monologues, didn't realize that you will get to spend time with the host in the most unique way, which is, in some cases, for people who haven't performed in front of a live audience, you're working with them on the thing they are the most terrified about, which
is... I never thought of it that way.
Walking out and doing... It's not pure stand-up. It, often cast members join them or it's a song. But to them, it's like I'm supposed to stand on stage alone on a comedy show and, you know, deliver a very funny speech. And it's a very scary moment for people. And it was a very valuable and interesting and strange experience to be with many people who have excelled in many different fields and, you know, kind of working with them on the thing that was the most terrifying.
So when you hosted for the first time, were you nervous about it?
I was terrified.
Why?
I was absolutely terrified. I mean, it was everything from, like, the feeling I had when I would have to play basketball in front of my family. it was like, these people know me, and, you know, it's not that people who know you don't love you, but they know you, and so, like, you know, they can't possibly think that I should be here. They've known me since I was, you know, 25 and just standing in the hallway like an idiot, drinking Dr. Pepper, and I'm a fraud, which is a common feeling among all people, I think. And you know, as much as I had written and worked behind the scenes, I had not had to step in front of the camera and deal with that. and to be rehearsing things as a performer that I'd written on that show and dealing with camera blocking, all things I'd done countless times on the other side of it, was so jarring. I had no idea how hard this was to be performing something you've written and wanting, you know, trying to listen to the jokes while making sure you're on your mark and looking into the right camera and then being, you know, pulled around to do costume fittings. And it was an absolute, it was scary. It was a very good education as to what it was like for the other side of it. For all the people that I made, you know, wear wires and fly through the air and put on any costume.
So, you used to be a writer on Saturday Night Live. What did you do in your audition?
I tried to do jokes that I had that had, like, slight characters in them. You know, not full one-man show immersion in characters. But I had some jokes back then about Law and Order and the different types of people you see on every episode of Law and Order, such as the guy the police interview who's always stacking crates and won't stop even as they're questioning him, who's like, Tony Ramirez? Yeah, I remember him. Good guy, you know, worked on Tuesdays. And the bartender who's shown a photo of the missing person and immediately recognizes her and everything about her, like despite being a bartender in Midtown who sees thousands of people every night, like, yeah, blue shirt lady, nice lady, sat at the end of the bar. Why, did something happen to her? It's like, yes, that's why the homicide detectives are speaking to you. So, as you just heard, my voice did not change that much, but I tried to throw in some slight character touches to it.
You've described yourself as a song and dance man when you were a kid. So, let's hear a musical, an excerpt of a musical you did on Saturday Night Live. And this is also from your second appearance hosting the show. And the musical is called Bodega Bathroom. And you want to describe what it's about?
Yes. It was kind of a... not a sequel, but a spiritual cousin to a musical piece I did the previous year that I'd written with Colin Jost called Lobster Diner, or Diner Lobster. I'm not sure what the official title is, about ordering lobster in a diner. And we wanted to write another musical piece about a specific New York conundrum or a New York City taboo, which is asking to use the bathroom in a bodega. Pete Davidson asks to use the bathroom in a bodega, and it opens up a magical world of that bodega bathroom.
Which is it's just a hideous, filthy bathroom in every way you can imagine.
Have you ever gone to the bathroom in like a grocery store or a convenience store?
Oh, I really try not to do that.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, everyone tries not to, but, you know, adult life is adult life, and you sometimes have to. And you get led back to this just place, you know, where they're like, they store things, and there's occasionally, like, a family photo that, you know, you're really like, wow, I wonder if that's that guy's parents. And, yes, they do try to dissuade you as much as possible, but if you give them that look, there's really nothing you can say. It's just that look in your eye of, you know, sir, I have no options. You either let me behind the soda fridge or something very bad is about to happen. I didn't plan this. I tried to leave the house. You know I didn't plan this. But there was coffee and my SSRIs have kicked in and a lot of things are going on.
Okay, here's my guest John Mulaney singing the Bodega Man from Bodega Bathroom, the musical.
What kind of creep would let a bathroom get like this?
I did. Who can sell you condoms? An Arizona iced tea? A Lucy cigarettes and plantain chips?
The Bodega Man can. Oh, the Bodega Man.
The Bodega Man can, cause he mixes lots of pills and calls them tiger sex pills.
Did you ever want to sing, like for real?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes. I mean, you can hear both the pathetic mid-range of my voice in that moment, but I believe you can also hear the absolute joy I have in being able to sing in a musical, even if it's for 15 seconds. I really wish I could sing. I cannot. My wife told me I was tone deaf, and I thought I might be tone deaf for a while. And then a friend of mine who was a trained opera singer, I said, I think I'm tone deaf. And she said, okay, sing any melody. And I went, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, which is the McDonald's theme, which was the first melody that came to me. And she said, okay, you're not tone deaf because you can follow a melody. She said, what you are is a terrible singer.
So you played yourself in what turned out to be the final episode of Pete Holmes' HBO series, Crashing. You play like a well-known comic yourself, John Mulaney, and your assistant tells Pete Holmes that you want Pete Holmes to open for you, and he's just like amazed, like he's just left the Christian circuit. Now he's got this opportunity, and he shows up at the club only to be told by you, it's like, what? I didn't ask for you. I asked for like Ben Holmes from Chicago, Holmes from Chicago. I don't even know who you are. But then you have the assistant call all these other comics who you'd like to work with, and none of them are available because the show's just in a few minutes. So you tell.
Yes, and it's at Town Hall, I believe.
Is it Town Hall, so, right? Which is a prestige place to play. So you finally tell Pete Holmes, okay, you're going to open for me, but then moments before he walks on stage, because he's already really like unnerved by this whole experience, moments before he walks on stage, you give him this advice.
God, I hate doing stand-up. I hate doing stand-up comedy so much. I only wanted to be a comedian my whole life, and the thing I hate the most is stand-up comedy. Hey, are you clean?
Yeah, I'm a clean.
No, you gotta be dirty. That way my parents will hate you, and when I walk out, I seem clean. I'm not a clean comic. People think I am, but I say f***ing ass and cocaine and all this stuff.
Okay, I'll be dirty.
I'll be dirty.
A little dirty.
Also, don't mention marriage. Don't mention adolescence.
A lot of it is about adolescence.
Well, then you don't do that. You do something else. Or you just say, welcome, I'm the venue owner, and then you walk off. Look, don't be bad.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ben Holmes.
So, were you chosen to do that part because you're not nasty?
I think Pete wrote me into that episode and one previously because, as he would say, we're very close friends, and I try to be a very nice person, but someone like Pete knows that I can be extremely mean to him in order to make him laugh. So that was always our dynamic as friends, was to make fun of the most sensitive things in his life to him, or when he was nervous, try to make it worse in order to make him laugh. But he thought that would be a good use of me, would be to play a tremendous bastard.
Yes, well done.
Thank you.
So you,
I forgot about the line, don't be bad, right before he walks out.
Well, that's really helpful, right?
that's so common, too.
Seriously? You know? People really say that?
Yeah. Not don't be bad, but you better kill. A club owner once said to me, I need you to do really well.
How is that helpful?
It's not. I always thought that's kind of an unspoken thing in live performance, that we would all like it to go really well. But yes, don't be bad is often said in a variety of ways.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a real, real pleasure.
John Mulaney recorded last March. He's nominated for 2 Emmys for his work hosting Saturday Night Live, and 2 for his work on IFC's Documentary Now. Our Emmy Week series continues tomorrow. We'll hear from 3 more nominees, Ben Stiller and Patricia Arquette, who are both nominated for the series Escape at Dannemora, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, creator and star of the Amazon comedy series Fleabag. She stars as a young, single woman who's a feminist but suspects she's a bad one. She's sex positive but often doesn't enjoy the sex. I hope you'll join us.